Montezuma's Revenge is just good old-fashioned American zombie takeout.
What's up? Welcome to episode 178 of Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, first off, I want to plug something. I have a solo project. It's a anime review YouTube series called Channel Anime. There is a link to the first episode on our Facebook page. I'll also be putting a link to the YouTube page in the show notes for this week. It's youtube.com/channelanimeshow. Just wanted to put that out there right off the top.
Pretty cool, pretty cool. I listened to the beta episode today. Actually, I got to watch a little bit of it, but, you know, I'm on the job, so I can't really watch things. Can only listen.
The editing is a little flawed, but for a first episode, it's not bad. I'll put it that way.
I've been meaning to plug something myself, too.
Okay.
I've been, it's a little hobby I had. I'm commemorating the 20th anniversary of a past radio show I did called The Hour of Unoriginality.
Oh, okay.
You can find a playlist on Spotify, if you are on Spotify, called The Playlist of Unoriginality.
And that's the cover playlist you've been putting together.
20 years ago, I just did a show of an hour of all covers. And if you just don't look at the list, just put it on shuffle and play the list, it will be just like listening. If you only listen to it for an hour, it'll be just like listening to one of the original episodes, only with some modern uptakes there.
The line that I always remember from that show, discussing that show back in the day, one of your heroes covered one of my heroes. Is that one on the list?
I'm trying to remember which one that applied to.
Willie Nelson covering Peter Gabriel.
Oh, damn, no, I gotta find that.
Explanation to for the audience. You said that to your father. One of your heroes covered one of my heroes.
I don't remember Willie Nelson covering Peter Gabriel.
Willie Nelson.
I have to track that down. But yeah, it is a lot of stuff just like that. It is a mixture of every, you know, genre of rock and some country and you know, jazz and reggae and whatnot.
All right, so on to some news. One story this week from, of course, Cinema Blend. Kelsey Grammer may take Nicolas Cage's rumored role in The Expendables 3. Deadline has learned that one more actor is getting ready to join the Expendables 3 crew. Kelsey Grammer is reportedly now in talks to take a part in the 2014 action blockbuster. Strangely enough, Grammer is being brought in to play the role that was originally thought to belong to Nicolas Cage. In the film, the Emmy-winning star will play a man named Bonaparte, who Deadline describes as an ex-mercenary who helps the Expendables in their mission. Okay, so
I'm stunned. What does Kelsey Grammer have to do with this?
You've seen the Expendables?
No, but I mean,
I've seen the first one. So it's all of these 80s action star types.
Well, right.
And okay, Nick Cage kind of makes sense in that.
Kinda. He wasn't an action guy until National Treasure and that sort of thing.
It's a stretch, but he's of the era. He was 90s. Working at the time, yeah.
You know, yeah, he did The Rock and Con Air, so yeah, he gets to go with them, but Kelsey Grammer?
Yeah, I think the most action he's done was the third X-Men movie, and that was all wire foo.
I thought the most action he had done was when he ran around the bar with scissors and shears.
Well, up until X-Men, yeah.
I mean, that was a lot of action. Mm-hmm. He was running with scissors.
True. So, yeah, that might be interesting. I didn't particularly like The Expendables. I didn't see the second one, but this might make the third one worth seeing.
I have to agree. That's I haven't seen the other ones, but I think I'd see an action movie with Kelsey Grammer in it.
Yeah. Alright, so on to this week's movie, which is from 1997, Waiting for Guffman. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by writers. If you're making a movie, maybe you don't actually need to hire writers, if you're willing to spend a year editing.
And also brought to you by Bubby Made a Kitcha, helping brave dentists get more wampum to buy pelts since 1914. It's a pretty simple plot if you think about it. There's a group of, some community theater players, some with more experience at community theater than others, being directed by a Broadway wannabe himself.
We've lived a slight variation on this film many times.
That is exactly what this episode is going to be about, isn't it? So he fills their heads with delusions of Broadway, and that for some reason a theater critic was going to make his way to Missouri to watch their production of, what was it, the bicentennial of their town?
The sesquicentennial or something. It was 150 years, whatever that's called.
150, okay. Of their town, Blaine, Missouri. And
the stool capital of the U.S.
Yes, yes. And it's
meaning the kind you sit on.
Right. Well, the chair.
Yes. The furniture. Continue.
Anyway, he fills his head with delusions that a theater critic is going to make his way to their small town and whisk them off to Broadway and make them, of course, stars. And of course, no such thing would happen.
Yeah.
And really, it's just about the play itself. From there, you can say hilarity ensues.
Mm-hmm. And does it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that kind of surprised me this time, and often, whenever I watch a Christopher Guest movie, because I forget how good they are until I watch them again.
It's been a long time since I've seen this. Same Mrs. Here. Scotto said she hadn't even seen this before, and I was kind of amazed, because I assumed we'd seen it together.
Mm-hmm. But the same happened with Spinal Tap, and I think happens every time I see a Christopher Guest movie, of the four that I know I've seen. I'm not sure. You know, the well-known ones, Spinal Tap, this, Mighty Wind, and Best in Show. I never think of them as being great movies. I mean, they're okay. And then I watch them, and they're amazing.
They are, again, like last week, just dazzling.
Yeah.
It's very hard to take notes when you have such crazy shit going on in front of you, and you just don't want to turn away from it for a second.
Oh, yeah.
Or you can't do the whole pause and write thing, or else you'll be there all night watching the movie.
For me, all day, yeah.
Yeah.
The only parts of the movie that were actually scripted, by the way, were the song lyrics.
Okay.
And And the songs were co-written by guest...
Keenan
and Shear, a.k.a. Spinal Tap.
Right. Why couldn't they have had roles in this, too? I don't understand that.
But everything else, every spoken line of dialogue is improvised.
Yeah.
Which is why it took Guest and the editor, Andy Blumenthal, a year to edit the movie.
And I tell you one thing.
A year and a half to edit the movie.
It is very rare that I, you know, look online for other criticisms or anything before we do this, but I had to take a look at the IMDb message boards to see... what was going on with this. I don't
actually
know why.
I didn't check them this time.
And first off, when I came to IMDb, this is only rated 7.4 out of 10.
Yeah, this was actually kind of a flop. It only made $3 million worldwide despite having a budget of $4 million.
I've never physically met a person that did not like this movie.
Same here.
I mean, yeah. It's just one of those. Like, who... And if you want to find the people that don't like the movie, just check the message board. And I have to tell you, they are some of the dumbest criticisms I've seen. There was one entitled Mediocre Improv.
Mediocre?
Yes. I think I almost want to read it here. Yeah, Really Bad Improv is the name of the review. The description of the experience, I'll just read excerpts. The description of the experience on the UFO, you can tell Paul Dooley is reaching for things to say. Same with Parker Posey when talking about DQ, and the quote scientist unquote when discussing the landing site. He would know that Blaine is six letters. Oh my God.
That's improv. That's part of the fun of improv,
There,
is
but
watching the
no.
actor's brain work while they're trying to come up with something.
But it was clear that they were acting as regular
Oh,
people
yes.
in a
And of
documentary.
course, of course.
These aren't professional actors.
Right.
That's the point of this entire movie. And for someone to be that dumb to say, wow, this wasn't professionally done at all, it would be like criticizing the Martian outfit in the play.
And
That
just
didn't look like a real Martian to
yeah.
me. That just looked like Eugene Levy in a Martian suit.
Yeah. And I actually have in my notes, I was impressed by the bad acting because when you act well, it is very hard to do it badly. It's like singing.
Right.
If you can sing, you can't sing badly.
Exactly. I mean, one of the best things, one of the best bits ever, all time, The Honeymooners, when Gleason and Norton are doing a commercial.
Right.
Get it, Corey Apple. Or when they're trying to do a script and they read string of polo ponies, string of Peloponnese.
I
But
get
these
a funny
guys
reading.
have it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not supposed to be slick. That is the entire point of this whole film.
Yeah.
They're amateurs, not the a real actors playing this. Because I mean,
Of
Jesus, if
course.
you think David Cross,
Yeah. I forgot he was in this. That was
me
a very
too.
nice surprise.
That was a very nice surprise. Like David fucking Cross is in this. I mean, I might not have even remembered who he was at the time I first saw
Right. Yeah, I don't think
this.
I
I mean,
did.
Mr. Show.
I wasn't familiar with Mr. Show at the time. I knew him from Arrested Development.
He was probably just the dude from Mr. Show, and this was before Arrested Development,
Oh, way
wasn't it?
before Arrested Development, yeah.
Yeah.
So I had never heard of him at this point, but probably when I first saw this. But the cast in general is amazing. In addition to Cross, you have Fred Willard, Parker Posey, Eugene Levy, Catherine
Eugene
O'Hara, his
Levy,
usuals.
he got a writing credit for this too, Eugene Levy. I guess he probably came up with so many jokes improvising that they had to give him a writing
Could be
credit.
that. They said the only scripted lines were in the song, and Spinal Tap wrote them. So maybe he contributed to some of that, or maybe he just came up with so many gags that they just gave him a credit.
Well, Mrs. Scotto was did a little IMDb digging on this because she was just blown away by it too. And one of the gags that the lazy eye thing,
Oh,
just
yes, I have that in
that's
my
your
notes too.
notes. Okay, good. They didn't tell Fred Willard
No.
about the lazy eye bit, and he kind of wondered about a line about in the because they did have some lines to say, like something about. What does your eye see?
What did your keen and perceptive eye behold was the line.
Yeah. Well, he had taken off the glasses, he says that line, and of course turns and there's Eugene Levy in his lazy eye. And you can really see him just kind of turning away with like a smile, just kind of like
And the trivia I have is that Willard was gone for 10 minutes laughing.
Oh boy.
And speaking of laughing on the set, during the scene where Corky, Christopher Guest's character, is teaching them dance moves, Levy had to be put in the back because every time he would come up with a new move, Levy would just fall down laughing. And they'd have to stop and wait for him. So they just put him in the back so he couldn't see Guest. And speaking of Levy, he plays the same character every time, but it's
Yeah.
always funny. It never gets old. And I
Now,
don't know how that works.
I had this is one of 2 weeks in a row. I've had an actual honest to goodness DVD to work off of and watched the missing, deleted
Ah.
scenes. The first shocking thing is that there is a fucking almost half hour's worth of missing, of deleted scenes.
Yeah, not surprised at all. They edited for a year and a half.
I mean, the movie's so short. It's like an hour and a half, not even. And seriously, there is another half. I mean, I kind of started nodding off during the deleted scenes, but I mean, it was kind of late at that point, and I thought there were only seven because that's what they showed at first. There's more to his story that they deleted. Now, no, at the end, where he's performing in this like retirement village kind of thing, noticeably missing is his wife.
Right?
Well, they deleted a scene about him being interviewed, you know, in the retirement setting, and they'd split up.
Oh, okay.
He left her to do that shit in the retirement village. Left her with the kid. And he's just kind of like, oh yeah, she's taking care of the kid, I guess. We just grew apart.
Well, they probably had like a solid week's worth of footage, and I mean by that I mean 7 times 24 hours worth of footage.
Like I said, there's 14 deleted scenes on the DVD.
Yeah. Because when
Seriously.
everything is improvised, it can't all be gold, no matter how good the cast is, so you have to cherry pick and you have to get a lot of takes.
Right. There are a couple things that really should have been. Well, that's one of them, of course. One of the two things I could say definitely had to be in. The other thing was the Martian, Nothing Ever Happens on Mars. That's a reprisal.
Of Nothing Ever Happens in Blaine, yeah, which is why the
Yes.
audience loses it when the song starts.
Right. Nothing ever happens in on Mars. So they definitely should have kept that in to set that up. Because you're kind of like, why are they laughing at that? You know? Like even before I saw the deleted scene, I was kind of confused as to why they were laughing so hard at that. They just made him look like a bunch of yokels, you know?
In an early cut of the film, the musical alone ran 40 minutes.
Yeah, I believe it.
So this was probably 3 hours in that cut. I mean, because the musical is what, 10 minutes in the final version?
Yeah, and honestly, I would have liked to have seen more of the lead up to it, you know, the rehearsal time.
Yeah. Well, that was the best part of the movie.
Right.
I mean, the musical itself was a nice payoff, but the body of it, the genius was the rehearsal
Yeah.
and the auditions. I mean, Midnight at the Oasis was hilarious. Eugene Levy trying to sing, genius.
Oh, some of them too. Like, you know what I had in my head for a good portion of today? That dude trying to sing Lightning Strikes Again.
Oh, yes.
Holy shit, that's terrible. I mean, that is really, really scary shit.
Yeah.
Or the guy doing Raging Bull
That was brilliant.
as a one-man show.
And it's been a while since I've seen the movie, so that kind of caught me off guard because he says Raging Bull, and actually, I think it's Taxi Driver, but I was still expecting, Are You Talking to Me?
Oh.
Because I kind of, the two kind of blend together in my head. So when he said that, it just caught me completely off guard and killed me.
But no, it was Raging Bull. It was about you fucked my wife. It was De Niro and Pesci scene from Raging Bull.
One guy doing both parts
Right.
badly,
Oh,
but
yeah.
in a very funny way. It's good bad acting, which is, hard to explain.
Oh, it's the crammed in Norton
Yeah,
thing.
exactly. Something I noticed this time that I hadn't noticed before, Corky has, a bowl haircut.
Yes.
The bowl portion is a different color than the rest.
Yes.
Under the bowl is gray, and the bowl itself is kind of light brown. Is it supposed to be a toupee?
I think so.
Okay, I never connected that before. I mean, it probably was a toupee anyway. I think Christopher Guest is balding, so he probably just had this light brown toupee that he just stuck straight on top of his head.
It's very reminiscent of Jim Carrey's Dumb and Dumber 2.
Now, I don't remember if it was an earlier cut or in the not script, but the outline. But apparently at the end, Steve Stark and Corky were supposed to get together. And there's a line at the beginning that really kind of hints at that. An aborted line, if you will. Stark says, "Corky will not let me audition any other time." And he clearly says stop
I
and says
never
auditions.
caught that. But it makes sense because, yeah, he really adores
Right.
Steve Stark, adores Corky.
It became clear that he, was interested throughout the movie, but that was the first
Yeah.
kind of hint, and it was, if you don't know the story, it's this odd throwaway line. You almost think that the actor was gonna say something else, because if it's improvised,
Right.
and he just went in a different direction. But then why didn't they retake it? But yeah, I think what they were going for is pretty obvious. Also, in an earlier outline, the theater was going to be destroyed by a tornado before they had a chance to perform the play. Now, normally I like when things take a dark turn, but not in this movie. That wouldn't have
No.
worked at all.
It didn't need it.
No.
This is already, has enough, there's enough negativity to go around in this,
Yeah.
They don't need to add over the top, drama like that.
Right. But that's the genius, is it never feels negative. It feels like hopeful, we're gonna put on this amazing show, because you're so behind Corky and the cast of the play.
Well, you kind of feel for the music teacher
Yeah, oh yeah.
and the facial expressions. Bob Balaban, his facial expressions are just fucking killer.
Balaban is brilliant. He does not get the credit he deserves. He should be
Never,
much more famous than he is.
like, never mind any of his dialogue. Just look at the look on his face when Quirky comes back and they're all like fawning all over him. He's just back there going, "Oh, fucking kill me right now." You could just see it coming through. Not even seething, just kind of looking with despair.
Right.
Like, I used to direct this, but now I'm not.
And I completely felt for him during the learn it and forget it bit.
Yes.
Because he just wanted to strangle Corky, because he just wasn't getting the point of the phrase learn it and forget it. Which basically means, it's an old music term, it means to, drill something and practice it enough to the point where it's second nature and you don't have to think about it when you actually have to do it on stage. But Corky just wasn't getting this concept, and so they kept going back and forth, and you could tell he just wanted to strangle him.
Well, that's the moment he realized Corky wasn't exactly who he said he was.
Right.
That Corky wasn't, a professional Broadway actor, director,
Right.
that he had never really actually done anything. And he just kind of throws his hands up after, that. I mean, he
Yeah, he
tries to
just kind of
take it
gives up.
back after he walks off, but when then he comes back, so it's, oh fuck, I'm stuck with him.
Yeah, he realized he was screwed, so he just wrote it out. Also, and I just have to point this out, the movie contains possibly the three most painful words I have ever heard.
Which ones are those, babe?
Penis
Dual capital
reduction
the
surgery.
Ah, Fred Willard, man. Looking at his IMDb, that dude, I mean, it was like 252 acting credits.
Wow.
200, that's not even like appearing as himself.
And again, Willard isn't really an actor per se, because he's the same guy every time.
Just about,
But it always
yeah, pretty
works.
much, yeah. I mean, he's a Second City alum too, so if you go to Second City, you see pictures of a young Fred Willard on stage.
A young Fred Willard would be interesting, because he was younger than I ever remembered him being in this. And he wasn't exactly young.
Yeah.
I was kind of, thrown by that. Speaking of thrown, how the hell did Levy fake a lazy eye?
Because he's Eugene Levy.
Yeah, that's gotta
That's
be it.
really all that comes down to it. I mean, he's just that talented.
Because the scene we're talking about where he takes the glasses off, when, Willard, lost it for 10 minutes. He's looking straight ahead with one eye, and the other eye is in the center.
Right.
Is go basically looking left. And I don't know how that's possible. Unless Levy actually has a lazy eye and no one's ever noticed, maybe he does wear glasses in real life. Maybe they correct it.
I didn't think that was possible, though. I mean, how would glasses correct a lazy eye?
I don't see how that's possible either. I don't see any other explanation for how he did that other than maybe some kind of contact, which is a distinct possibility.
I think he's just that talented, and that's why
Yeah.
Fred Willard did not see it coming.
Right.
Because I'm sure the two have worked together many
Oh,
times before
yeah.
this in the past. Wasn't he in Spinal Tap too, Willard?
Oh, it wouldn't surprise me. Both, I'm sure
Like
both
as
of
one of
them
the
were.
managers.
Yeah.
I don't remember Levy in Spinal Tap,
I
but
don't remember him, but I don't remember a lot of people who are in that movie because there are just so many, small parts from people who went on to become very well known.
Willard was an army colonel
Oh, right, now I
there
remember.
on the military base.
Because I was kind of surprised to see him in that part when we reviewed it a while back.
Yeah. And now I have to look up if Eugene Levy was No, he
No,
wasn't.
okay. The thing that really confuses me about this movie, and a lot of Christopher Guest's work, the pacing shouldn't work.
No.
Because it starts off with the scene that really is kind of confusing and seems, utterly pointless, and then most of it is kind of utterly pointless, but funny. And it's just got this meandering pace that just should be boring as hell, but it's not. And I don't know how he does that.
It's just worry with the people. I
Yeah,
mean,
it's got to be the chemistry.
he has such talented people there. I mean, just in throwaway parts too, like, David Cross and Larry Miller,
Brian Doyle Murray.
Brian Doyle Murray, who most of his parts were edited out.
He has one scene in the finished film.
Yeah, there's like he was in two of those deleted films, and his mo the young kid's mother, the wife of Brian Doyle Murray, was she was a known actress too, but never made it into the film.
Wow.
Yeah, I think she was the one from The West Wing, but like the press secretary.
West Wing, Allison Janney?
I think that might have been her. I don't know because she's not credited because she didn't make the film.
Yeah. And the other confusing, or not confusing, but odd thing about this movie, it does a perfect job of walking the line between sort of painfully awkward and incredibly funny. Like, if it
Yes.
took a step in either direction, it wouldn't be as good. Like, it could be funnier, but it wouldn't have that awkward side that is just really not exactly cringeworthy, but almost.
Yeah, there's sometimes, I mean, like the auditions have so many great cringeworthy moments. There's the scene where Corky's asking for a raise and they think he's joking.
But it's never cringeworthy to the point where you feel embarrassed for the character, where it's
Right.
not fun. But that little bit of, slight cringeworthiness makes it, the funny parts even better. It's just this perfect job of walking that line.
And there's people online on that same message board that mistook this movie for a criticism of small town life. And that's not it at all,
It's, if
actually.
anything, a celebration of it.
It's really more about, the community theater experience.
Well, that too. It's primarily that, but it's also, it is a celebration of small towns and kind of the quirkiness of them.
Well, the point at the end, and something that somewhat got edited out, but really the point in the end was none of them were happy there. And really, if you look, at the end, Fred Willard and Catherine O'Hara, they took off for Hollywood. And Eugene Levy goes off to Miami, turns out leaves everything behind for it. None of them really liked it. Corky goes to New York. And I forget what happened to Parker Posey.
She ended up in another Dairy Queen or
That's
something.
right. She leaves town but winds up at another Dairy Queen in Alabama.
One more bit of trivia. This is Meryl Streep's favorite movie.
Anybody that, it's pretty much going back to what I'm saying, anybody that's had the community theater
Yes.
experience, holy shit, this is it.
And you said that's what this episode's going to be about, and we haven't really touched on that.
No, we haven't.
As we've talked about before, we did a lot of student theater at OCC. You did some more at Montclair.
Right, and the thing with doing theater at OCC, it wasn't a college theater, it was the
No, no.
community theater.
Right. It was the student theater. It wasn't
It
the
was the.
official main stage. It was this little.
Oh, okay, you're talking about dessert theater.
Oh yeah. Oh, community theater too. Yeah, the main stage was the community theater.
Right, the main stage was the community theater because, they didn't want to deal with us shitheads from the college.
Right.
He wanted to bring in friends or whoever from the area. And yeah, that, I think that reminded me a lot more of that than our dessert theater experience, which, I don't think there are many people that had delusions of grandeur.
Well,
Well,
no. You didn't have the same delusions of grandeur with dessert theater. We all knew what we were in for.
there were a couple people that came in
Yeah.
thinking that they were just slumming with us, kind of.
But the scale of the theater in the movie was closer to the scale of the dessert theater. It was, this little conference room, in the back of the college.
True, true.
That's the aspect that of the movie that reminded me of that. I never was involved in any of the main stage productions, but I always kind of got the feeling that they were a little bigger than, the theater troupe in Guffman. A little
I'm
more
trying to
involved.
remember. I don't think I ever went through like a read the read through, with them. The initial stages. I always came in later because I always had just bit parts and stuff there. But man, the egos that were there were just ridiculous. Because there are a lot of people that were just friends with directors there that kept getting casted over and over again in whatever they wanted. And so they felt pretty much that they were just so huge. And it was kind of like, dude, it's Ocean County, New Jersey, man. I mean, there's, taking your job seriously and stuff and wanting to put out a good product. And then there's the person that believed that, I'm gonna be on Broadway after this, which it was a very common thread in a lot of Montclair main stage productions. I believe one of our friends said that they believed that as soon as they graduated, that there was going to be this, golden rainbow staircase that was just going to open up from there to Broadway and
Wow.
just they and he was right. They really did believe, especially if they were in like the fine arts program, because they pumped their egos up so much because they had to be cast in things. They
Oh,
really
yeah.
weren't
If
competing
you
for
don't have to work
roles.
for it, then yeah, you're gonna get arrogant.
All they had to do was compete to stay in the department, and how many people were really competing to get into the department?
Oh, I found the a number of hours of footage in the movie, 60 hours of footage.
Wow. So they could have done a trilogy pretty much, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And still had plenty of outtakes.
Well, yeah. Wow, so if they did like a real special edition DVD of this, they could do like a four disc.
Oh God, all 60 hours? I'd want to see it actually.
I think I would too just once, yeah. I
Yeah.
mean, although seeing like after a while you're kind of like, okay, you can see why things weren't in there,
Oh yeah. That's any outtake. There are very few outtakes that I've seen that I thought should have been left in.
Although, kind of would have been nice to just leave the entire musical in, you know?
Would have added another half hour to the movie. It would have been a feature-length film.
Yeah, it would have
And a
been.
quarter of it would have been the musical.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm not a fan of the musical numbers in general, but in this case, I would have liked that.
Oh, of course, but when you set up a joke about nothing ever happens on Mars like that, You can't take the setup
Oh,
out.
exactly. You have the payoff and no setup, which makes no sense. I mean, the song itself
Right.
was kind of amusing, but
Right.
with that setup, it would have been, well, it would have merited the audience's reaction.
Right. Because again, this isn't really a criticism on small town life. I mean, it really, if you think about it, the small town folk, the ones without the crazy aspirations, are the normal people.
Right, they're the happy ones.
Yes. They're happy where they are and where they live, and they don't think, negatively about it, New York or the big
Right.
city or where they are. It's the people that have these aspirations of becoming a stand-up comic because it's in his blood.
Oh, speaking of criticisms, I do have one criticism of the film, and this has been a love fest, and it is a great film. But one minor little criticism, the whole Guffman not being Guffman thing with was it Peter Cook, the actor's name?
I
No, not Peter.
forget, but you could see it coming from a mile away.
It was the guy who played the doorman on the Jeffersons. I can't remember his name.
I can't either.
But he's in the audience, and they think that he's this famous critic, Guffman, that they've invited to the show. And afterwards, you find out that there was a message from the actual Guffman that, he was snowed in New York, and this guy was just random guy in the audience who Corky is fawning over. Saw it a mile away, but I don't know that it could have been done better.
Well, right. Because, I mean, you could tell he's too bumpkinish to be a New Yorker, a movie critic. He's just kind of like, whoa, thank you, telling them that they're going to go far. He thinks they will go far
Right,
or make
right.
it to Broadway. As soon as he says that, of course, it's kind of like,
Yes.
really?
That's when you know he's not the critic.
Right.
But I kind of saw it coming ahead of that. Pretty much when he walked in, I knew that that joke was going to be there.
I can't tell if it's just because I've seen it before.
That could be the case, yeah. But especially when he says, they do have a chance of getting to Broadway, yeah, you know he's not the guy.
Right.
But literally my only complaint, and I'm pretty much done with my notes.
Well, as
I
I've
don't
lost my
have notes,
notes.
so yeah. On to sequels and remakes. Obviously no room. Well, actually, I was gonna say obviously no room for a sequel, but I would love to see a sequel.
Yeah, I guess they come back for some other.
Same cast, bring everybody back, and have them work with Quirky again, and find out if they were all happy or where they went.
Yeah, some sort of reunion, I guess, where they're going to do another production to commemorate, something else in the town.
Some kind of benefit for Blaine. They all come back and just examine what leaving the small town and chasing the dream has done to them all. Except Parker Posey's character, because she just kept working in a Dairy Queen, of course.
You kind of see what it did to them, I guess, although I guess they edited some of that out
Yeah, you saw all the outtakes, all of the deleted stuff.
because they had like another interview with Fred Willard and Catherine O'Hara, who are just kind of, you could tell they're just miserable even though they're in Hollywood.
But revisit it 16 years later, if they do it now. 15 years later, say, whatever, 15, 20 years later. Revisit these people and see where they are. And it's so rare that I say I want a sequel to a great movie, but I think it would be very interesting, and I think Guest could pull that off and make it really good.
Of course. It's because it's Christopher Guest, and it's because of the people he's going to cast in there. I mean, another idea for a sequel would just be other people in the town.
Porky comes back to Blaine and just takes his old job back and is doing another musical with a new cast.
Right, this time he does cast his pharmacist, boyfriend.
Well, that's one thing I thought about when I saw that they had cut that him and Stark had gotten together at the end. Did they ever flat out say that Corky was gay?
No, it's just very heavily
It's obvious,
implied.
of course, but they never establish it definitely.
His wife's. I've never met his
Well, that's
wife
right.
before.
He did say he has a wife, so he's in the closet.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever. She's out of town right now, so that could be.
Right.
I've never met her before.
So that's probably why they cut that part. Oh, one last bit in my notes I saw. The memorabilia shop at the end.
Oh, at the remains of the day lunchbox.
The My Dinner with Andre action figures. I want them. I don't even remember anything about the movie. I just want My Dinner with Andre
Of
action
course.
figures. And the remains of the day lunchbox and everything there. It's just, as a, a geek and a collector, I loved that.
They could sell that merchandise and
Yeah.
make a pretty good dollar off it, I think.
I just loved all of this, movie merchandise that nobody ever expects to happen, to be there.
Yeah.
It was just beautiful. And just, of course, back to sequels and remakes for a moment. Nobody should ever remake a Christopher Guest movie.
No.
Unless it's Christopher Guest.
And even then, I can't even think
It's
of
just kind of pointless if it's if he's doing it.
why would you remake a movie that was largely improvised,
And
you
I think
know?
we said the same thing about Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
It's no, don't even attempt it. All right, so on to brains.
On to brains.
Like I said, I had the one minor little criticism, but that didn't even take away a half. I'm going five. It's a Christopher Guest movie.
I can't even find. I tried to find come up with the reason to take something off from it. There really is nothing. I mean,
Aside from that one bit of predictability, it is flawless.
it's paced perfectly. The predictability had to be the way it was
Yeah.
anyway. There's no other way, you know, if there was a zing to any other direction, it wouldn't have made any sense.
Right.
And they really do manage to sneak, whether you realize it or not, they sneak a joke in every scene at
Oh,
least.
yeah.
At least one joke. And it's
I
not
would
even.
say probably every other line is a joke.
Exactly. And it's not even where they're hitting you over the head with it.
No.
And if you're not paying attention, you could miss the joke, but it's there. And
Yeah.
sometimes the joke isn't even really a joke. It's just the sadness is what's funny about it.
Yeah, exactly.
The dentist trying to be the actor who then tries to become a stand-up comic or whatever the fuck he's doing at the end of this
Right.
retirement home.
I think just a general entertainer.
Yeah. So, five brains. What more can you say?
All right, so what have we learned?
We learned that there are really stupid fucking people on IMDb message boards.
Yeah. I learned a couple of things. I learned that as bad of an actor as I was back in the day, I could have been a lot worse. And I also learned that I need to buy every Christopher Guest movie because they are that fucking good.
Yeah.
All right, so until next week when we'll be reviewing A Boy and His Dog, not as good, but very, very interesting. I'll put it that way. It's Don Johnson in a science fiction movie.
Well, I mean, 2 weeks in a row we had movies that I've recommended, so I think it's time to slum again.
Well, not exactly slum. It's not horrible. It's just a
Okay.
little iffy, and the ending is why it's on the list. That's why we're reviewing it.
All right. Well, I haven't seen this, so yeah, I will try to go in with it as open-minded as possible, even though it is Don Johnson.
One of his best performances, I will say that I've
That's
seen.
not saying much.
True, but it is legitimately good. Until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to, links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus, links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. You also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review. We need to put some more in order because A Boy and His Dog is the last one that we've decided on.
All right.
You'll also find the request form. If you've got something you'd like to hear us review, leave it on the request form. We'll get to it eventually. And the recommendations list. It's a Christopher Guest movie. I don't think there was ever any doubt. The reason the other two aren't on the list is because it's just going to be the same old song and dance. I think.
I think if we're like, you know, down the road, if we feel like doing it, you know, I don't even think I've ever seen Mighty Wind.
Oh, you have to.
Yeah, I don't know if I have or not.
And has he done more than those four?
And this one I had mixed up with For Your Consideration,
Uh-huh.
which I've seen, many times actually.
But has Christopher Guest done more than just those four? Guffman, Spinal Tap, Best in Show, and Mighty
He
Wind?
has a very weird IMDb. There are movies that he's done that you would not have expected him to have done.
Okay, because when I say all of the Christopher Guest movies, I mean those four.
Yeah, like he's he did like some Kevin Bacon movie. Like really
Wow.
weird. I mean, not weird, weird, but just odd that he's done some mainstream movies. In a way, Princess Bride was kind of him. I mean,
Well, that fits, actually. It does fit his sensibilities, and of course, it's a classic.
I guess if you right now they're doing a series on HBO, which from what I understand wasn't as good as the movies, but it's
Princess
pretty.
Bride?
Yeah, fan. No, he was doing a show called Family Tree.
Oh, I've seen the first episode. Roy from the IT Crowd is in it.
Oh, cool. But
It was okay.
yeah, from what I understand, the problem is, he's so good with setting jokes up in the, hour and a half, 2 hours,
Right.
but doing it over episodes, over weeks, not exactly his thing.
I've been meaning to actually get back to that show. It's good you reminded me, because not only Roy from Chris O'Dowd, that's his name, Roy from the IT Crowd, but Amy Simons has a recurring role, from what I understand.
So here we go. We have For Your Consideration, Mighty Wind, Best in Show,
I forgot about For Your Consideration, actually, until you mentioned it.
Waiting for Guffman, and Spinal Tap. But he's also done some weird shit like Almost Heroes and Attack of the 50-Foot Woman.
Wow.
Things you would not have expected him to have done. The Big Picture.
So really just those four or five, depending on if you want to. Yeah, for your consideration, I would include.
Yeah, definitely.
Those are the masterpieces.
Yeah.
The rest, eh.
Well, he's due for a new,
Oh,
you know.
yeah.
Oh, those are movies he'd written.
Okay, that's the difference. So as
Yeah.
a directing wise, he's just done those five. The masterpieces.
Oh, no, he's done like the Big Picture. He directed a lot of stuff that he,
Oh, okay. Anyway, back to the outro.
Yes.
You can email us, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZTL1, or for the alphanumerically challenged, 414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next week, always remember and never forget, wherever you go in life, there you
There
are.
you are.
Thank you.
Good. That was great.
Thank you.
Really good.
Well, thanks a lot. And thanks for coming.
Which is why it took Guest and the editor, looking for the name, Andy Blumenthal a year to edit the movie.